You're a busy guy. You're on a plane with me. You're probably going to get home at 5 p.m. You're going to be hungry. You don't have to figure out what to cook.
It is a kitchen technology company starting with an AI-powered cooking assistant designed to help people understand what food they already have in their pantry, in their refrigerator, reduce waste, and make grocery shopping and cooking decisions a little bit more efficient.
To be honest, before I went down the rabbit hole, I had no idea that 33% of the food that we buy literally just ends up in the trash can.
You said, building a business or building a startup is less about speed and it's more about stamina.
The gas has to be right. Like the business idea has to be right. It has to have product market fit. It has to have the right strategy. If you have a poor culture, a lot of those things become very, very difficult.
I would argue that it's probably even more than just the engine oil or the gasoline. It's really just the maintenance of the engine itself and the car itself.
And we understand people need a co-pilot. And that's what we're building. We're building a food intelligence system.
If you're new here, welcome. I'm excited that you've joined us. Every single week, I get to sit down with CEOs, leaders, founders, builders who are doing something really fantastic on the planet. They're building a business that's making a difference in other people's lives. And I get the opportunity to sit down and chat with them and learn how they're doing it. The lessons, the failures, the opportunities, and they're going to leave you and me every single week with some nugget, mini nuggets actually, that you can integrate, implement into your business to do the same thing. So I'm glad you're here. Sit back, let's get into it.
Welcome back. I'm Devo, your host. This show is a little bit different than most podcasts, or at least the ones that I have listened to and been on. I think of this less as a traditional interview and more of a thinking room, hence the name laboratory, right? So we're going to explore the intersection today between identity and strategy and psychology and sort of like, how do we, what's the behind of building the things, right? And sometimes that means taking what is working. Sometimes it means examining what isn't working. And most importantly, it always sort of shows up is the friction and the identity behind what we're actually building, right? And so today we're going to step into the world of technology, which is front and center on every entrepreneur's mind. We're going to talk about food systems and human behavior. And my guest is Jay Lee. He is building a company called Springhouse, and he's doing something that every single mom, dad, family on the planet is going to be really excited about. But it is a kitchen technology company starting with an AI-powered cooking assistant designed to help people understand what food they already have in their pantry, in their refrigerator, reduce waste, and make grocery shopping and cooking decisions a little bit more efficient. So I'm really excited about that. As a single father of two young teenage daughters, I'm always looking for ways to not duplicitous grocery shop and sort of have something on the table that's fresh and healthy and all that sort of stuff. So one of the things that makes this conversation interesting is food and technology is one of the most universal human behaviors there is, right? Everyone eats and almost everyone wastes food, present company included. I think I threw out like 10 things this week in the refrigerator because I was in Tampa for a week and I came back and I was like, dude, did my daughter do anything but order takeout while I was gone? Like I literally went grocery shopping the entire week so you would have food and you touched none of it. So that's a different, I need an app for that, Jay. We got to get on top of that. So Jay, welcome to the lab, my brother. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Devo. Yeah, you're hired. You should do the elevator pitch for me every time. So yeah, happy to be here. You're a true pro. You're doing three podcasts in one day.
Yeah.
So
it's my pleasure. Honestly, the reason, and I was talking to a guest earlier this morning, the reason I do this is, first of all, the learning curve is exponential for me. The amount of information that I get to absorb on a weekly basis is like, basically, it's a podcast encyclopedia for me. So you're making me smarter in the process. And just the relationships that I build through my podcast has been just you can't state enough the value in that. So anyhow, but let's talk about you. I want to talk about this idea. Before we jump into technology, I want to sort of jump into something a little more fundamental. I think a lot of businesses, a lot of founders, a lot of creatives, and I was in this shoe before, we think we're building a product, right? But when you really break it down and you examine the companies that have really figured it out, that succeed, right, they're actually changing behaviors, right? So let's start there. What behavior are you actually trying to change with Springhouse?
Yeah, so first off, I think before you can change any behavior, you have to have awareness, right? Mm-hmm. Like the whole, you have to be able to measure something before you can manage it. Everywhere in the food system, there is, in the supply chain, there is a system involved. So farms know what food is being shipped out, what is, you know, what their yield is, what's being wasted. the cold chain supply trucks, that whole thing that magically brings fresh produce to our grocery stores, they know what's going on. Supermarkets, grocery stores, they obviously have solid inventory, what's going to waste, what's being sold, et cetera. The home has no such system. So there is a lack of awareness. And what we're really trying to highlight is, hey, there's a lot of food in your home. And believe it or not, here in the Western Hemisphere of the United States, 30% of that food gets thrown away. And that is to the detriment of your wallet, as well as, you know, climate change. So first off, let's be aware of how much food is going through our kitchen and how much is being thrown away. After that, yeah, there's, I think people's eyes will be open in terms of, man, like there's all this food going to waste. There's all this food I don't know what to do with. And what's ironic is we have all this food and we kind of don't know what to cook for dinner every night. It's a real chore. There's a cognitive load on everybody come around 3 p.m. It's like, what should we cook, right? And, you know, I've been there, you've been there. You open the fridge, it's full of food, but you kind of don't know what to cook. So the behavior change is really understanding what you have, what you can cook with it, and we understand people need a co-pilot. And that's what we're building. We're building a food intelligence system. Springhouse is going to help you cook with what you have in time with one meal recommendation every day.
There's a lot of things and parallels to unpack there for a minute. And yeah, you talked about awareness. You must be able to measure something before you can manage something. And before you can properly manage something, you have to have a system to do such. Awareness, I mean, there's so many existential layers to that whole word awareness. But it really does embody itself in everything we do as humans, as personal development, as professional development, and then building a system, whether it's a gym routine, whether it's a diet routine, whether it's a routine to systematize and automate the redundancies in your business, like all of these. So before you can do any of those things, you have to have this awareness. So I love that you're talking about that, but you've taken this idea, this existential idea of being aware, sort of understand what you have. You said, what do you have? What can you do with it? And then how can you build a springboard to sort of build something around that? So the idea itself, I'm assuming you've dealt with this. You talked about 30% waste, but can you sort of give me, if you made that light bulb eureka moment where you were just sitting there thinking, bro, I have the best fucking idea ever. Tell me about that moment.
Sure. I came home one day from the supermarket. I went to the supermarket with a recipe in mind. On the list of ingredients that I had to buy was sour cream. I came home, I opened the refrigerator to put the sour cream away, and there was an unopened tub of sour cream already in there that's about to expire. And I'm just sitting there like, how do I not know that I already have sour cream in there? Anyway, that happens to everybody. It's probably happened to all of your listeners. But for some reason, that really, really, number one, irked me that day. And I just couldn't let the idea go. I think the why it was so troubling to me is, like, number one, we live in this tech laden era where we have all these powerful gadgets and technology implemented in supermarkets, in our phones, in our homes. It broke my mind as to why this problem hasn't been solved. Number two, I think there's an issue with recipe apps. Recipe apps, they don't know what you have. They just tell you to go buy all this stuff. And you come home and you end up with duplicates, which leads to food waste. The responsibility is incumbent on us to keep track of everything that we have. And that we all have some mental system. Sometimes we use Apple reminders or notepads or whatever, but there's not a really good system. Anyway, so I went down this rabbit hole and there's no real good solution. There have been some attempts, hasn't really worked out. And, you know, you go deep down, you start unpeeling this issue about food waste. And to be honest, before I went down the rabbit hole, I had no idea that 33% of the food that we buy literally ends up in the trash can a couple weeks later. You know, trash day, you go through the fridge, you're like, oh, this smells funny. That looks very brown. That's very wilty. Berries really irks me. I have kids and they like to eat berries, but Man, sometimes I'm like, I bought those berries 3 days ago. How are they already moldy? So all this stuff has really opened my eyes in terms of like, man, we really need a system. It's really difficult for people with family, jobs, etc., to come home, know what you have, and then to like actually put a good meal on the table. So that's what we're trying to solve. I think the home, the consumer, really needs a food intelligence system, and that's what we're trying to build.
So there's two layers to what you're building. The first one is sort of a grocery tracking mechanism that keeps track of inventory in your pantry and your refrigerator sort of stuff. And we don't need to get into the nuts and bolts of it, but I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of a QR code or some sort of, I think we talked about a photograph level where the AI is going to interpret whatever it is you brought home, track it based upon standard shelf life, et cetera, et cetera. But how, and then the second piece, sorry, and the second piece is the actual consumptive side of it, which is having recipes that are correlated with whatever is in your stock, whatever is in your inventory. So that's the two layers, right? And I get those correct.
That's right.
So just on a high level, and we don't need to go into all the technicals, but I come home from Costco, which is where I buy a larger items, right? And we talked before we met, like a lot of unnecessary things, right? And I take a photograph on my counter of all the things that I bought. Your system is going to amalgamate the inventory and it's going to assign sort of a shelf life and then, of course, a tracking mechanism, some sort of a lever that's going to work on your app that says, hey, your blueberries are starting to get at the stage where they need to be done something. And then it's going to pop up and say, have you considered, hey, this is a smoothie option that you can make, or here's a pie option you can make. So it's going to take And here's where my question is it going to take the existing inventory, correlate it with the recipe that you have that the existing recipes can make? Or is it just sort of like an arbitrary, hey, have you considered making apple or blueberry pie? Or does it actually use the inherent inventory within so that we can capitalize on what we already have?
Yeah, let's answer the last part. It's going to try to capitalize on what you have.
Got it.
Recipes, it's essentially doom scrolling. You're looking at like 20 recipes, and then you click one, you're like, I don't have that. So you click the next one. It's like, okay, this one, I'm missing two things. I have to go shopping. What we're trying to do is serve up recipes with the items that you already have, the best match. Also, understanding your preferences and taste and maybe what you got going on that evening. So to backtrack to the beginning of the question, yes, there are two layers. It's the inventory layer, which is what broke my brain, right? The sour cream, like how come I don't know what I have sour cream at home. So we're tackling that with gusto for sure. But I think, through talking with potential customers, the real problem is what do I cook? How do I put dinner on the table? How do I feed something delicious and maybe nutritious to my family. And a lot of folks is like, if you know what I have, you should tell me what to cook. So that's the second layer. It's the cooking layer. So again, we're tackling inventory, like you said, through multiple modalities. So in other words, different methods. One is using your phone. You have a camera. How do we use video or pictures to help interpret what you got? Second is using voice. As you are unloading, can you just sort of narrate what's going on? Like I'm putting two tomatoes away, two oranges, a gallon of milk, et cetera. And then we have essentially like what we call receipt capture. How do we take your receipt, take a snapshot, and tell what you sort of log it for you. We're trying to minimize sort of the friction and the work that one has to do. We don't want it to become a chore. And that's where some people that have had this idea in the past have sort of not created the behavior change. The theme is behavior change because you have to sit there and log. And what we're trying to do is make it as frictionless as possible, really work in the background so that we can capture as much of that inventory as possible.
And that
And then,
friction. Sorry, go
then
ahead.
it's like, how can we help you cook?
And
Yeah, something
the
of that.
friction that you're reducing is sort of giving us multiple ways to do inputs so that our outputs are better managed.
Correct. Correct.
There is still going to be some level of agency, though, on the consumer. Like, this is not fully automated robot system. You're going to have to kind of do some manual work up front to start developing the trend, I'm assuming, and sort of get the model working properly so it can anticipate and react and all the things accordingly.
That's absolutely right. And I think with every behavior change, there has to be a corresponding value derived from that behavior change, right? So something like MyFitnessPal. The first time I opened that app up, I don't use it regularly anymore, but I did use it pretty religiously for a while. And it's like, you're logging food, but the whole point is you're deriving some value, some lifestyle mm-hmm. change, health benefits, et cetera. So that's what drove that behavior change. And a lot of people use these food logging apps out there. Mm-hmm. We understand that it is on us to deliver value to the consumer so that this behavior change can take place. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to minimize how much behavior change there is, make it as frictionless as possible, maybe even a little bit of fun.
So is your model only geared towards consumers? And if it is, why are you not targeting restaurants? I would imagine that the same application could be used in restaurants or any other sort of inventory-based system that utilizes food as a redundancy, yes?
Yeah, you're 100% right. But like I said earlier, everywhere else in the system, the food system, they have their own system. So restaurants for sure have their own system, whether that be a clipboard that's hanging up by the walk-in fridge or, you know, ERP systems or even just a basic spreadsheet. They track inventory religiously. Could they use a more automated system? Perhaps. What we're trying to tackle is the consumer space because people do not have a good system, if a system at all. It's just sort of in their head. And they have to remember, I have leftovers in the back far right corner of the refrigerator, and I have to eat those in 3 days. Wouldn't it be nice to have a system in place that can surface that up for you? So essentially, Springhouse should know your food as well as your phone knows your calendar. Where it's like, oh, you have a meeting, you should leave. By the way, it's raining. Put 5 more minutes into your drive time. Like, we should have that in the kitchen.
It's interesting enough, having worked in restaurants a large part of my high school and college life, you would think that they do have systems, and they do have systems. But I did a little research before I came to the show just so I could sort of have this conversation with you and not sound like a buffoon. 30 to 40% of food is wasted across the U.S. national restaurant food system. I know a large portion of that is consumers leaving food on their plate, and you can't obviously recycle that. But there's a 10% waste in actual just inventory from the restaurants annually. It equates to 11 million tons of food waste. So anyway, just a thought. Like, until you start actually looking at data and sort of like realizing what's actually going on behind the scenes, which is, you know, to your point earlier about having systems in place, it really is kind of an interesting statistic. I did an exercise a few years ago with a business coach of mine where I logged my time on what I was doing every day, just so we could sort of get a sense for, you know, where my energy was going in my business. I'm not going to go into the details because it's a little bit embarrassing, but when you actually take a look at your data and then realize that you can put a system in place to sort of remove, to your point, man, if you're not taking a look at your data and seeing how you can optimize that like you're doing with this product, phenomenal. If I may, just sort of want to kind of talk a little bit about this idea of, when I was reading sort of your onboarding and my first conversation about you, you said something that really stuck with me. You said building a business or building a startup is less about speed and it's more about stamina. Is this something that you learned personally, or was there some sort of like catalyst behind that, or a specific moment in your career when you realized that endurance matters a little bit more than velocity?
Yeah. So we touched upon this during our pre-call, essentially. I'm a second time founder. I built a company in defense tech, and now I'm in food tech. And I think what I learned through my first go round is that, I mean, the first go round, I just wanted to go fast. And I constantly thought, man, if we just get to here, we're going to turn the corner. And then you kind of get there and you're like, okay, if we just get here, we're going to turn the corner. And if you do it long enough, you kind of realize, man, there are no corners. It is a constant grind. Mm. And I know nowadays, especially in the age of AI, like there's all these stories about startups sprouting up and in a month they have 100 million ARR and they're just like off to the races and they're getting these huge seed series A rounds. So maybe it's a little different now, But I do think that you have to be, as an entrepreneur, you have to be in it for the grind and know that these things take time. Like everybody says, like, yeah, we're an overnight success that took 10 years in the making. So now that I've, second time, I completely realize that. It's like these things do take time. It's a 20-mile march every day. And we're consistently building, consistently trying to gather feedback and put out the best product we can Q2 of this year.
What is that? I'm curious your take on this. What is that balance between stamina and still having efficacy and still being able to stay in the game and still being able to take time to sort of step back and sort of just be involved in the process itself rather than pushing, pushing, pushing?
So this is a consumer product, and I was in defense tech. B2G versus B2C is very, very different. And I think number one, you have to build something that people want. And to be sure that you're on target to do that, you have to constantly take a step back and try to gather more feedback, understand the user journey. And cooking is universal. So sometimes we, within the team, we're just talking about like, hey, how do you go grocery shopping? Like, how do you decide what to cook? And just understanding each other's stories, but also getting out of our bubble and talking to people outside and understanding what their process is. It's amazing through all the feedback. Just like the way people compile recipes is, it's like from ocean to ocean. There are so many different methods, from notebooks to post-it notes in cookbooks to Notion to Apple Reminders, Apple Notes. It's there's actually not a consistent, like, oh, a majority of folks do it this way. And just trying to understand how everybody approaches food and how they cook, and you know, people are coming from different skill levels. That's been very fun to discover, because you kind of know what you know, and just understanding other people's stories and how they go about their business in terms of in the kitchen. It's been pretty eye opening. That all said, I also think a consumer brand needs to have a certain vibe, understanding the emotion of the customer and trying to tap into that and build something that they would emotionally connect with, I think has been, you know, an interesting discovery process. And we hope we hit bullseye.
Will your app be able to synthesize recipes that are not inherently part of the suggestive pool that you're going to provide? So for example, can people ocean to ocean upload their book of recipes or their Instagram saves or their whatever it is, their notepads, their sticky notes? Will they be able to also sort of, just like they can take photographs and the AI model matriculates that, will they be able to take photographs or upload their existing library of recipes and then sort of synthesize it with the system itself?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody has their favorite set of recipes. I for sure have a few that my kids love, right? And you know, there's recipes that have been passed down from generation to generation. We don't want to lose those, so we're definitely going to try to incorporate those into our system. But what we're also trying to do is get people out of ruts, right? Sometimes you're sort of cooking the same thing every Monday, and the way we're approaching delivering what we call adaptive recipes, well, we have our recipe frameworks essentially. We have folks that understand food science and the roles every ingredient plays. And we've built a taxonomy of these ingredients and ontology of these ingredients so that it can know what goes with what in terms of steps, the roles that they play, so that we can offer up something to cook based on what you have. So it's not a static recipe, it's an adaptive recipe. And we've built in the sort of the structure behind it so that we understand you have carrots, you can swap in the carrots, but you're going to have to cook those earlier as opposed to spinach, which cooks really, really fast. Or this recipe normally calls for chicken breast, but you have bone-in chicken thighs. That's a different cook time, a different sequence. So our taxonomy and ontology, again, created by humans, recipe architects, we're trying to build them into frameworks so that we have adaptive recipes, recipes that you can actually use up what you have. You probably know, you've scrolled through a recipe app, you find something and it's like, dang, I don't have three things. you either run to the store real quick to go buy those three things, which is going to eat up an hour, right? Drive,
Sure.
try to fumble through the aisle, get to the self-checkout line and come back. Or you're doing substitutions a little bit blind, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I don't have this. I'm going to throw in, you know, lemon instead of vinegar, and let's just see what happens. And sometimes it works out, but sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's really what our framework in terms of adaptive recipes is trying to solve for you.
I hate those self-checkout lines at grocery stores, just a sidebar. But honestly, and I said this when I first met you, in terms of universal applicability, this is one of the better ideas that I have come across in a while. So well done. Where are you in the stage of this right now? You're still development, you're in beta. Where exactly are you? When can we expect this magnificent idea?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a wait list open. It's on springhouse.co. We came out of stealth end of last year. We have hundreds of people signed up, but we can always use a few more. And currently we're still in development. We're about to enter the phase where we're going to use it internally ourselves and then start opening it up to some beta users. We've promised the first 100 people that signed up for the wait list that they're going to get first dibs, first look at what we're working on. And we expect that to happen in the next few weeks. And we expect a full rollout Q2 of this year.
That's great.
And you know, it's March already, so we're working at it.
You're in your second business. First one was an exit. Mm-hmm. Second one you're building right now. I'm actually in my fifth business, so I can relate to this sort of the ideology around building businesses early on versus what it looks like today. Just the entire strategy, the throw spaghetti noodles at the wall early on in the infancy of this process. What has building companies in your second now? What has building these two companies taught you about yourself that people might not expect?
Might not expect.
Because if I were to Google you, and I did, I do a lot of research. This is why I get prepared for these shows. You know, I see founder, I see operator, I see somebody building technology, I see leader, I see two former owner of a different company. But behind the scenes, behind all of this, what is it that somebody might not expect or might not find about you in Google? Like, just give me like sort of the inside loop on who you are.
Sure. I think first and foremost, I identify as being a husband, a father. That's really, you know, what I enjoy and brings me life. So I'm married, happily married, and I have four wonderful kids ranging from 14 to 8. That does not show up on my LinkedIn, but people who know me obviously know that I love driving the minivan and taking my kids to places. And
you're the first man who has ever admitted to owning and loving driving a minivan. I'm just going to call you out on that one.
My wife's always like, why are you driving the minivan? It's like, my kids call it daddy's car, but anyway,
it is so damn convenient and useful. I will tell you, I rented one in Colorado a few years ago with my family, and I just remember thinking, this is really looks like I look like an idiot driving it, but it's really useful and has a lot of bells and whistles in here.
I do love the minivan. It's a smooth ride. And,
it is.
You know, the doors come out, this like they slide. There's no door dings, you know. Like,
that's funny.
I enjoy the minivan. But that all said, yeah, I mean, obviously, being a family man and trying to build a business, you've built a few there. You know, it's hard. It's hard balancing all that time out. And that's what I guess people don't see behind the scenes. In terms of building a business, I think a lot of folks have some level of imposter syndrome. And even the most successful people, I think people have to realize, like, hey, sometimes they're making it up as they go. And what we're building here is a net new sort of concept. Yeah, we're all learning, even as we're building. We have a end goal vision, for sure. But along the way, the steps that we take, I think people who haven't built a business or, you know, think everything is just magically is a success overnight. Like, yeah, you have to realize there's the period of suck where you're just trying to figure things out. And yeah, I mean, that definitely does not show up on a shiny resume or a LinkedIn profile or Wikipedia page or whatever.
Well, the reason I'm asking is I'm a firm believer in sort of the identity of the individual, the identity of the founder, and sort of how that sort of imbues itself in the company they run or the company they keep or the people they hire or the culture, et cetera. And I always like to understand how an individual sees themselves, because invariably you're going to see those patterns, those loops, those characteristics in the company they build and the people they hire. And so I'm just curious how you talked about awareness at the outset of the show. Have you ever stopped and sort of thought about who am I as an individual? Who am I as a man, as a husband, as a father, as a leader? And how do I carry those characteristics in a positive, impactful way into my business? Like, what are the parallels between the two of those?
Yeah, I think the through line between business and family is understanding your values and being able to live out those values, be an example, and have them imbue into whatever you're doing, whether that be your family life or your company. I'm a big believer in corporate culture. I think that's really the, I used to say culture is the gasoline that runs a company, but I have since changed my tune where it's not the gasoline. It's actually the motor oil. I know people drive EVs now, so this might be an antiquated sort of analogy, but it's what reduces friction within the organization or the operation of it. Gasoline may be the idea, the strategy, the business model, et cetera. So there's a lot of tactical, and the gas has to be right. Like the business idea has to be right. It has to have product market fit. It has to have the right strategy. But if you have a poor culture, a lot of those things become very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. It's almost like chewing glass. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, you may wake up and want to go back to sleep, but with a solid culture, like the thing hums. And that's what I did in my first go around, and that's definitely something that I'm trying to bring to Springhouse or develop alongside my colleagues here, because we're a startup. We have a blank piece of paper, a blank slate, and we're trying mm-hmm. to build a great culture. Mm-hmm. You know, in both cases, the two companies that I've sort of worked in and helped build, that's what we're trying to do, like create a great workplace, somewhere where you'd be very happy to show up to work and be proud to tell your friends at a cocktail party that like I work here, and it's just wonderful.
I like your engine oil and gasoline analogy. I would argue that it's probably even more than just the engine oil or the gasoline. It's really just the maintenance of the engine itself and the car itself, sort of like the inputs equal outputs. I have, and the reason I say this, I love your analogy. I have a Toyota 4Runner that has now driven by my daughter. It's a 2011, and we just hit 500,000 miles on it. And this thing runs smooth as the day I pulled it off the lot. But there's a reason behind this, and I try to explain this to my daughter on a daily basis. You have to take care of this car like it is your baby. It gets regular maintenance. I've been taking it to Toyota since I bought it. You know, every 5,000 miles it goes in and has all the oils changed, the fluids changed, the tires rotated. It's literally given a maintenance check, a hospital check-in every 5,000 miles, and that's the reason it's still running the way that it is today. So I love the analogy, and I love the reference. It totally landed with me. But I want to sort of still drive a little bit further on you as an mm-hmm. individual. So sure. You look at Jay, the individual, the father, the partner, the CEO, the leader, the friend. What's the through line between how you view the world? Like, what is the core? We've talked about values. What are the core values that you believe in that you are seeing or want to see imbued into the company that you're building, this second company?
I definitely try to embrace and live out. And number one, I do believe in humility. Humility, being humble is a big part of my core identity and values. And I try to bring that to these organizations because, man, Rome was not built in a day, and Rome was not built by one person. We are talking about working with people. And I truly believe in the power of teamwork. But if, you know, people have to bring a level of humility to the fight, for sure. And a lot of times I've talked to folks that are superstars in the organization, and they're like, hey, you know, like I'm doing great work and I should get a raise, and here's all the stuff I did. And I do like to sit down with them. It's like, you are great. You have a lot of innate ability. However, you're working within an organization, and the organization is built up of other great people, great systems, documented processes, smooth communication. And as great as you are, if we didn't have a lot of those things, maybe the results would not be the same. The outcomes would not be the same. And I try to shed light on that because, hey, we have to work as a team, and you have to understand what you're bringing and what everybody else is bringing, and we're all gonna level up. Rising tide raises all ships. On top of humility, I do think that understanding that a lot of times people get bent around the axle, upset with a coworker, a spouse, a family member, etc. And they tell stories. They tell stories in their head, like, "Oh, that person was trying to do something malicious to me, undermine me, etc." And a lot of times, if you actually get to the kernel, the truth, it's just people didn't realize what they were doing. So I do think that everybody in situations, I try to bring a level head to these things, like assume positive intent. People are just trying to do the best they can, and what's great and what's sort of the issue is that we're all human. And the stories in your head really can mess you up because you start to believe stories as truth. But I like to talk to people as like, "Hey, the story in my head of what you're doing is XYZ." And usually the other person's like, "Oh, that's not what I was going for at all. I was trying to do this." And it's like, "Oh, that's actually very nice of you." So I think positive intent is a huge one for me. And that shows up in just general happy demeanor. I think that like really is the outcome of just understanding that people are usually coming from a positive place.
That's a good segue, now that you're mentioning it, because perception is reality, and sometimes the stories that we receive are not the same stories that were originated. And I'm dealing with one of those situations right now with somebody. So when we talk about the story of Springhouse and you're getting ready to go to market, you're sort of in this test beta mode. What is the story of Springhouse right now in terms of explaining it to your audience or getting the messaging down so that the perception, the reality that they interpret is the same intent that you intended to deliver? So how are you making sure that those two are in alignment?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was at a dinner end of last year, one of these holiday get-togethers, and it was a bunch of folks that I had met for the first time. And they were like, "Hey, Jay, what are you working on?" It's like, "Oh, we're working on a food intelligence system." And everybody was like nodding. And then one guy called it out. He's like, "You guys are all nodding like you know what a food intelligence system is. Like, let the man explain." Okay, yeah. So we understand that some of this concept is new. And we will have to explain what we're trying to do. But I think that if we can surface up, especially in your first onboarding or your first sort of interaction with what we're building, if it's a positive one where, "Hey, we sort of know what you have. Like, why don't you try this?" We think that there will be an aha moment. The first time a delicious piping hot meal shows up on your table because you followed our adaptive recipes, we think that will be another aha moment. We understand with something that's net new, the process to get acclimated and understanding what we do, what we're trying to do, and the value that you'll derive is a multi-step process, perhaps a few days even. So we do believe that onboarding and understanding and being empathetic, as well as sort of being in the background and not in your face and not making you do all this work up front and not giving you 55 notifications a day, is really the key to our success. And I do think that there's a few apps out there that probably could benefit from this, especially in today's AI age.
So where have you landed with that question right now? If I'm sitting next to you on an airplane and the question that everyone asks instead of who are you, what do you do? If you had to explain Springhouse to me in one sentence sitting next to me in the plane right now, what would you say?
The short one is we're building a food intelligence system that's going to help you understand what you have and tell you what to cook.
So I
One
nod my,
recommendation.
so I'm nodding my head, but I still don't actually know at the end of the day what problem is that solving for me. That's what I would want to be most intended and in, most in interested in hearing. So what would you say to that?
I would say, listen, you're a busy guy. You're on a plane with me. You're probably going to get home at 5 p.m. You're going to be hungry. You don't have to figure out what to cook. We're going to tell you what to cook based on what you got.
and save me money in the process because I'm not going to have so much waste.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Money, time, you name it.
How much of this product is actually about technology from your point of view, and how much of it is more about psychology of human behavior?
Obviously, the base of this is technology. The technology is being built out, given the tools that we have today, to provide as robust a system, given what's available right now. But at the end of the day, like I said, it is about human behavior, human awareness around, man, I have no idea what's actually in my fridge. Man, figuring out what to cook, something that I've done every day, this could be easier. And just awareness over, wow, I waste a lot of food. How can I mitigate that a little bit? So for sure, technology is the base of it, but I do think that the food waste problem has gone, has grown in size, in aggregate as well as within each household. And just bringing light to that, shedding a little bit of light on that, I think is a positive thing for the world.
It's interesting because and I don't know the data on this. I know you're a data guy, but there's probably a direct correlation, and I'm imagining that time is involved in this as well. But the level of abundance or prosperity versus the amount of waste that incurs, because, and I'm speaking from experience, I travel a lot, and I've spent a lot of time in third world countries, and I've spent time in not touristy resorts, but like with real families. And I'm always blown away at how ingenious and innovative people who don't have a lot of money, whether it's furniture in their home, whether it's the clothes they wear, the food that they cook, and how inventive they can be. And then I come back to America and this gluttonous state of ours where we're throwing 33% of our food out on a weekly basis. There's definitely a direct correlation there. And I'm wondering, just sort of like existentially thinking here, at the end of the day, what is the behavior change that you hope to see if Springhouse works exactly as you would imagine it would work?
I mean, I gave the analogy of your phone just being super intelligent in terms of your calendar. Like, how can we create a food system, food intelligence system that understands what you have in the kitchen just as well? That's really the long-term vision. We understand that starting off, there's going to be a little bit of behavior change, just to come back to your original sort of topic here. There's behavior change, through a lot of these amazing story arcs around the products that we use today. But yeah, what's the value that folks are going to derive? Like, we want to help people cook and not be in ruts and not feel stressed and reduce that cognitive load. So, I mean, people have whoops and auras. I knew nothing about sleep when I was growing up, but nowadays people are so invested in sleep and understanding that. And we have these gadgets now on our fingers and on our wrists that help surface up this data. And you check it in the morning. It's like, how did I sleep? Oh, I have strain, or, I got to take it easy today. It's essentially, but you're not checking your aura like you check Instagram or what, or email. We don't want Springhouse to be an app that you check like every 30 minutes and you end up doom scrolling. We want it to be working subtly in the background. And when you need it, come see us. Like, oh, I have some carrots that I got to use up.
I love that.
Let's make a stew tonight.
I love that. I love a good stew. Soup is underrated. I feel like a good soup with your leftovers and just sort of like the variables that don't ever get used anywhere is an underrated recipe that most people should look into. I'm a big soup guy. I love just sort of like taking the amalgamation of the things. I never tell my kids what's actually in the soup, but I make a really good soup stew based upon just leftovers and just nonsensical things. So, this has been a great conversation. If we have this conversation again in 3 years from now, what would you hope at that point in time that people are saying about Springhouse in the sense of how it changed the way they cook or the way they eat or the way they don't waste? Like, what would this conversation look like in 3 years?
Well, we hope it's some form of, man, if I didn't have Springhouse, I'd be really upset, or my life would be more difficult. We're obviously trying to build something people want. And like, I use the word value a lot, like value derived from our solution. We hope to continue to build out our system, whether that be through software or hardware, so that people do get a good picture of what they have, and they have the freedom to expand their cooking horizons or make sure that they know the exact steps to ensure what they're cooking right now comes out great. Mm-hmm. So that's really the hope. We do have, big hopes and dreams, right? So we're working toward that, and we think that software layer, first off, and understanding that there may be some behavior change and walking the user through that, is going to go a long way.
I appreciate that. My guest today is Jay Lee. If you want to get some more information about what they're building, it's springhouse.co, right?
That's correct.
And I'm assuming you're on all the social media channels if people wanted to connect that way. Is there a story going on behind the story that's being built right now on your social media?
It's essentially everything that we've talked about here. Essentially, hey, there's a lot of food waste going on. There's a need to understand that static recipes are kind of creating more stress in your life, and you really need adaptive recipes. But, as a consumer facing company, and this is sort of new for me too, because I came from B2G and now I'm in the consumer business, we are trying to build in public. So we understand that in this day and age, people want to understand like the story behind the company, how it's being built, the troubles that you had, and sort of the obstacles that you face and how you overcame them. And we're really trying to build in public, be open about all our successes and failures. And that is a little new to me, but we're working through that, and it's been fun.
It was new to me the first time I ever sort of realized the power of social media. And I learned this from a friend of mine many years ago, and she was showing up on social media in all these transparent and vulnerable ways. And I was like, I'm a pretty private dude deep down inside. Like, I'm actually more introverted than I am extroverted. Most people are surprised at that. But I like small, deep, meaningful conversations. I don't like big crowds, but I can roll up into them and behave and perform. But I need to like reset after that. But I started seeing how she was making these connections with her audience and telling her story and talking about the things that struggled with, in a sense of she went a little overboard, but I sort of saw the value in it, and people really resonated with her truth and sort of like her ability to just sort of show that she was human, even though she had this very successful business on paper. I was just like, it was refreshing to see. And that's a sort of a model I've kind of adopted, and in, I wouldn't say enhance, but sort of fit my order. But it is really amazing what people actually value and want to hear. You said value derived. I love that idea of value derived from your values, because ultimately that's what goes into, what you build. Well, man, you lived up to your billing. I really appreciated this fascinating conversation. Thank you.
No, Devo, thank you. I appreciate your time. Thanks for speaking with us, and hope we get to do it again soon, hopefully after we launch.
Yeah,
we'd love to tell some tales then.
I would love to. I appreciate the ambition behind what you're building, because this intersection between technology and human behavior and everyday life is where some of the most interesting companies are ultimately created. And in from, you look at sort of the history of that, that's where a lot of sustainability occurs. So for anyone who is listening and enjoyed the conversation as much as I did, first of all, thank you for being here. If you do want to learn more about Jay and what he's building behind the scenes at springhouse.co, and follow along on social media. And for anyone else that is sort of just really intrigued by the conversation, if this sparks something in you, that you have an idea, or you have a product, or you have a design, or you have a behavior that you'd like to discuss, or the psychology behind something that has depth and meaning, please reach out to us here on the Brand Storyteller and get an application in. We have a fantastic conversation like we just did with Jay. Jay, I would like to sort of put you on the spot. If you know of somebody, our entire show comes from organic referrals or outreach that we do from people that we find interesting. That's how we found you. I came across you on LinkedIn. I was like, I want to talk to that guy. Please reach out to him. So if you have somebody in your Rolodex that you think would be a good guest on the show, would enjoy a meaningful conversation like we've had today, please introduce us via email. I'd really appreciate that.
I will do. I'll definitely think through folks that would enjoy speaking with you, but I'll put the plug in. You're the best host. You definitely prep me well, and you're incredibly respectful of our time and our story. So thank you so much for letting us talk about it here. And yeah, everybody, follow our journey, springhouse.co.
Yeah, man, the honor is mine. I when I first saw your story, not to like continue to to bear on this, but I saw your story. I love innovation. I love ideation. I love when people can take something that is important to them. Most importantly, like you had your own experience around it that was the springboard for this, the catalyst for this. And I'm like, I definitely want to check out this guy and learn a little bit more from him. So it's been inspirational for me. So the honor is all mine. For those listening, thank you. I know you have choices when it comes to podcasts, millions of them, literally. So I appreciate your time. We're under an hour today. Thank you, Marielle, for pinging my ear and telling me to stop talking. And for all of you who are listening and want to connect, you can find me on thebrandstoryteller.com and share this story, like this story if you find somebody who would get value from it or who wants to sign up for Jay's list of 100 to be a beta tester, please reach out to Jay. Jay, thank you for being in the lab today. I appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks so much, Steve-O. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man. All right. That's it for today, folks. Thank you. If this episode hit you, like it, subscribe it, leave a review. It helps a lot more than you think. And it helps the right people find this show and help us keep growing so we can continue to produce amazing episodes. You can find me at thebrandstoryteller.com if you're interested in connecting with me. And everything else about this episode, the guest, the websites, the social media handles, they are all linked below. I'll see you in the next show.